Live from New York City, it's The Gary Null Show. And now, your host, Gary Null.
Hi, everyone. I'm Gary Null. We have a lot to share today. The latest on health and healing and how regular chocolate consumption is linked to a lower risk of having heart problems. Harvard University and Aalborg University from Denmark. Also, if you're not familiar with taurine, you should be. Simply one of the most important nutrients you can take into your system. And I'll explain all the myriad things that it does to your betterment. Same with vitamin D. There is a University of Sao Paulo in Brazil about how it could help with pain management. And then fruits and vegetables can benefit your legs. New York University study on that. And pomegranate strikes to the heart of cancer malignancy. That's from Sergio Greenmed Info, one of the best resources you can have. And just another reminder that swimming pools, well, they're disgusting unless there's proper hygiene, but there generally isn't, and I'll explain that. And then today, I've chosen not to have a guest so that we can have more time on health and healing and also open calls. I'm going to be having a guest on who's going to go into great depth about the fraud at the Democratic National Committee and the roles played by the Clinton family and Debbie Wasserman Schultz and others against their own rules. Because the rules are, and it's very specific, you're not allowed to be partial towards one Democratic candidate over another. But they were. And it was really down and dirty. Now, here's the takeaway message. Instead of having all this wrath towards Donald Trump, put it into something constructive. Try to get organized and follow up on universal health care or stopping GMOs or denuclearizing our world. There's so many good things to put your energy. But it seems like so many have just put all their energy into hating Trump. And the argument is that if it weren't for Trump and working with the Russians, which has never been proven, there's no evidence to that. But there is evidence from the leaker from the DNC. Now, this is where it gets interesting. I happen to have some source material that shows, independent of what the public has been told, that the real source leak of the DNC that got thousands, tens of thousands of emails, Podesta emails, on Hillary Clinton to WikiLeaks and Julian Assange was Seth. And Seth was murdered. But it was supposed to have been a robbery, but nothing was taken. Jewelry wasn't taken. Cash was not taken. The wallet wasn't taken. A cell phone wasn't taken. Well, what kind of robbery robs nothing? So anyhow, the question is, who would kill him? What would be their motives? And then it turns out that almost certainly in the very near future, you're going to find out more about Seth Rogen and what happened. So, anyhow, that's for a separate issue, but that's not going to go away, and that's not a conspiracy theory, as the New York Times tried to make it out to be, and it's front page yesterday. So the argument is, well, Hillary Clinton was cheated. Cheated of what? I'm going today to do something that the other media has not done. I'm going to show you the actual voting records of Hillary Clinton and Bernie Sanders. Because even though I voted for Jill Stein, as I did for Ralph Nader and Rocky Anderson and others who are the Green or Independent Party, I will show you why Bernie Sanders would have been a much better president and would have been a shoo-in. All of the studies show that he would have been the candidate for women. He had been the candidate for minorities. He had been the candidate even for conservatives. Had more respect for Sanders than Clinton. So she would not have been able to have done as well as Bernie Sanders. Sanders would be president today. So if there's any lesson to learn, it's the Democrats shot themselves. They never figured Trump would win. This was to have been a coronation of her. So today you'll get the proof on how bad she was on the issues. Now, you can like her or dislike her, that's your business. But on the issues, she was not on the side of the people, minorities, women, the environment, peace, none of that. She was an absolute, complete neocon. So I'll share that with you. Also today, I had someone make a comment that they really liked the last two programs where I did a classroom on the air, one dealing with the brain and how we can slow down, in many cases, reverse brain aging and actually rebuild the brain and hence regain our sense of youth and vitality in our mitochondria, repairing DNA damage. The other was on inflammatory conditions and specifically arthritis. And the person said they learned more about arthritis, and they happen to have arthritis, but then suggested that that's all I should be talking about every day. It's just health. So today I'm going to answer that person and explain why they should take a look at the broader picture. And if I do not deal on all these other issues and the consequences to the corporatization of American healthcare and our environment and the corruption within our government, then you wouldn't have any of these freedoms. I wouldn't be here and have a freedom to talk about an issue like health. You wouldn't have an opportunity to see any holistic dentist. There would be none. Chiropractor, the profession would be gone, done. You wouldn't be able to see a holistic nutritionist, a life coach. They wouldn't exist. But I'm going to give you very specific examples, and I'm going to give you one example of what I was fighting against for decades that has now come out. And of all places this information and proof came out, the Journal of the American Medical Association published an article on this about the sugar industry and how it bought off scientists and skewed the dietary guidelines for decades. And one of the people mentioned of the scientists who were involved in this was a man who was considered the most important nutrition professor in America from Harvard, Frederick Stare. He was the one who was supposed to debate me on national radio. The debate was set. I had all my research on him and his Department of Nutrition at Harvard, and he didn't show up. We found out later he said that he couldn't be bothered he was playing tennis. This is after agreeing to. No, he'd have had his arguments completely deconstructed, and people would have seen the truth of them. That's why these people refuse to debate. But I'm going to get into that when I show you that virtually everything is politics. Everything. And especially when it comes to our freedoms of choice, just like vaccines today. So that's what we have to share, and some audio clips. And later on, I'll open up our calls for talk back. We always want to begin with an area that we can all be enhanced in our well-being. Well, I know most people like chocolate. Two types of chocolate, the raw organic cacao, high in polyphenols, no dairy and refined sugars, and that's the best. The other, milk chocolate with sugar, that's not good. This study comes from Harvard as well as Aalborg University in Denmark, and what it says is that regular chocolate consumption can be linked to a lower risk of developing the heart rhythm irregularity, atrial fibrillation, also known as heart flutter. And it finds researchers published this in the journal Heart, peer-reviewed journal. So a lot of people suffer from AFib, some because of complications from anesthesia, some, and more often than not, because of excessive athletic training. It is very common, if you're a long-distance runner, to have AFib. And in and of itself, that is not a big risk factor, providing that, and here's the caveat, that you continue to exercise, but not to excesses like marathon and ultramarathon, that you have a good plant-based diet, keep your blood naturally thin. And how do you do that? green juices, apple juice, beet juice, high in nitric oxide, all good for your blood. Vitamin E, tocotrienol, generally 400 units for mixed to call for olds in the morning and 400 in the afternoon. And if you take them in the morning and before you go to bed, you can help keep your blood thin through the night, and that's when a lot of strokes and heart attacks occur. Also by taking cayenne at a high heat unit. It won't burn you, but it sure does keep the blood thin, and always keep that on your presence, because if you ever start to have a heart attack or feel like you're having a stroke or heart attack, just throw as many 5 or 10 into your mouth at the same time, and that could save your life. Also, coenzyme Q10 or ubiquinol, phenomenal for getting oxygen into the heart and providing energy to the mitochondria, including the heart mitochondria, generally 400 units. Also good for the heart is L-carnitine, C-R-N-T-I-N-E, 1,000 milligrams in the morning, 1,000 in the evening. And also hawthorn, 200 in the morning, 200 in the evening. Ginkgo biloba, 200 in the morning, 200 in the evening. And those are your single most important nutrients, with magnesium being the single most important. Magnesium from, well, there's several good sources of magnesium, but for my purposes, citrate. Citrate is C-I-T-R-A-T-E, citrate. And 5,000 milligrams in the morning, 1,000 milligrams in the evening. So this way, don't be afraid of it. Now we can add something new into that formula I just gave you. And by the way, if everyone who had AFib did that instead of taking the blood-thinning medication, which also can lead, as I mentioned yesterday, to death, because on the one hand, when you take an aspirin, you do thin the blood, but you also destroy folic acid, B6, B12, and vitamin C, which then increases your risk of homocysteine, which in itself is a major predictor, along with C-reactive protein, of a heart attack. So how smart is it? You reduce your risk of a heart attack, and you reduce your risk of a stroke and increase your risk of a heart attack. It makes no sense. The protocol I just gave you reduces your risk of a heart attack and stroke, and if every American, if every single person just took what I'm just suggesting right now, it is my absolute belief that we could save about 400,000 lives a year in the United States, every year. Or put another way, in 10 years, 10 short years, we could save over 4 to 5 million American lives. Small price to pay for something that is natural, non-toxic. Now add chocolate to that. Because the association seemed to be strongest for a 1 weekly serving for women and between 2 and 6 weekly servings for men, and about 33 million people suffer from AFib. So the chocolate made a difference. The darker the chocolate, the more impact it had. So one more way that we can help ourselves, and that's just one of the things that chocolate does. Now, from the University of Sao Paulo in Brazil, vitamin D combined with good sleeping habits can help to reduce pain. This was published in the Journal of Endocrinology, and they found that about 1,500 units a day and a good night's sleep can alleviate pain. It also helped alleviate arthritis, chronic back pain, menstrual cramps. Those are a variety of different pains in the body. Fruits and vegetables can benefit your legs, so says New York University. Now, we already know that eating plenty of fruits and vegetables can help keep your leg arteries free of blockage. Quote, our study gives further evidence for the importance of incorporating more fruits and vegetables in the diet. And this was the instructor of medicine at the University School of Medicine. People with peripheral artery disease have narrowing of the leg arteries, which limits blood flow to the muscles and makes it difficult or painful to walk or stand. And they did an analysis of over 3.7 million people, and they found those who ate 3 or more servings of fruits and vegetables a day had 18% reduced risk of peripheral artery disease. And they published this in the journal Arterial Sclerosis, Thrombosis, and Vascular Biology. Now, I believe that they would have gotten phenomenal results, as I have, in working with individuals and health support groups, if you put that up to 14 servings of fruits and vegetables a day, including in those would be juices, where you're getting 100% assimilation of the nutrients and absorption. And if you added in magnesium and vitamin C and quercetin, you can reduce varicosities, spider veins, the purplish discoloration, which is actually the veins, the little arterioles in the ankles and the feet, where you're not getting proper circulation. Blood's going down, it's pooling, it's not getting back. And that's why when you're sitting, I don't care if you're in a car or in a plane or a desk at home, just stretch your legs out, then bend your toes down as far as you can, hold them for about 30 seconds, then back up in the opposite direction, point your toes towards your knees, holding your legs straight, hold them, do it about 4 or 5 times in both directions. That increases the musculature pressure, creating venous flow to come back up. That can help you. And pomegranate, according to this latest study from Sayre G's GreenMed Info, is important for cancer malignancy. Now, ever since chemotherapy and radiation became the standard of care, oncology has been in the dark ages. So could the scientific community finally be waking up to the incomparable cancer-killing power of foods to cure what conventional treatment only makes worse? And one of the more important discoveries in biology and medicine for the past 15 years is that cancer stem cells are largely responsible for the failure of conventional cancer treatment. What do I mean? These cancer stem cells, which represent a small population of tumor cells, like 1 in 1,000, are cancer cells characterized by stem cell properties such as self-renewal or the ability to give rise to all cell types found in a particular cancer sample. Now, these cancer cells drive tumor development and progression and metastasis and drug resistance and are highly resistant to chemotherapy and radiation treatments. To the contrary, these conventional treatments actually increase their number and malignancy. Now, the discovery of cancer stem cells at the heart of cancer malignancy reveals that the present-day standard of care in oncology is doing far more harm than good. It also indicates a desperate need for faster, more effective alternative treatments that have selective cytotoxicity, meaning the ability to kill only cancer cells and cancer stem cells while leaving unharmed non-cancerous tissues. Well, there are several natural foods and substances that can do exactly that. They kill cancer stem cells and cancer cells, but do not harm other tissue. High on my list would be turmeric, T-U-R-M-E-R-I-C, along with about 2 dozen other foods and plant compounds. I've reported this many times. And the key is this, that the fact that radiotherapy wavelengths actually transform non-cancer cells into cancer stem cells, and chemotherapy causes their enrichment in what remains of the tumor after treatment, a result which may explain why cancer often comes back even more aggressively following treatment. So here we come to the pomegranate. Now, pomegranate is a cancer stem cell killer. A recent study published in the journal Food and Chemical Toxicology looked at the effects of a pomegranate extract on cancer stem cells. And the title of the article was In Vivo Relevant Mixed Urothelins and Ellagic Acid Inhibit the Molecular Colon Cancer Stem Cell Features, a New Potentiality for Metabolite Against Cancer. That's kind of an esoteric title, but that's how almost all these titles are. So the new study simply proposed that colon cancer stem cells, quote, offer a novel paradigm for colon cancer treatment. And the researchers look at how colon metabolites of polyphenols from pomegranate interact with and affect the stem cells. And specifically, the researchers look at, quote, the effects against colon cancer cells of two mixtures, and then they found that it made a big difference. So the researchers confirmed that these mixtures, they, in this case, they use walnuts and pomegranate, were able to suppress the colon stem cell cancers taken from the primary tumor of a patient with colorectal cancer. They showed these mixtures of walnuts and pomegranate altered the phenolic and phenotypic and molecular features of the colon spheres, the cancer stem cell-based microcolonies of cells that can become invasive and lethal cancers with time. So the takeaway message is, eat your pomegranates, drink unsweetened pomegranate juice, and put some concentrated pomegranate liquid into your smoothie. And by the way, swimming pools, public swimming pools, are not clean. This is from the CDC. They were looking at what happens when people are not aware of the lack of hygiene in these pools. And you've got the swimming pool, and what they're looking at is all of the pools, quote, that your local pool is filled with urine, but that's not the worst part. As the Washington Post recently reported, new CDC data shows that pool-induced diarrhea is on the rise. In fact, outbreaks of the parasite Cryptosporidium at pools and water parks nearly doubled nationwide. From 2014 to 2016. Crypto, by the way, is the most common cause of diarrhea outbreaks linked with swimming pools and water parks. And because it can survive up to 10 days in chlorinated water, it takes only a mouthful of contaminated water to make a healthy person sick for up to 3 weeks. And infections can cause watery diarrhea and stomach cramps, nausea, and vomiting, which leads to dehydration. And so just got to remember, if it were done correctly, you should have people take a shower and properly scrub with soap and water before they go into a swimming pool. It's not the adults that generally have the problem. It's the children with using the pool like a bathroom. But if someone has incontinence, they're not going to be able to control themselves. And once something's in the water, it contaminates the entire water. And that's why anytime we have a retreat, we always are emphatic on doing a class and make sure people actually take their shower and practice proper hygiene. Doing it correctly, swimming pools can be great. Doing it incorrectly, you can end up in the hospital. And also, I'll finish off our health and nutrition today with some reasons why I believe we should all be taking taurine, T-A-U-R-I-N-E. It's an amino acid, and amino acids are the components of protein, and proteins are the building blocks of life. And you don't need to eat any animal proteins to get all of your amino acids. You can do a good plant-based diet. And taurine is a non-protein amino acid that is sulfur-bearing and crucial for the metabolism of fats. It's necessary for building skeletal muscles, the central nervous system, the retina in your eye, and even your cardiovascular function. It's important on all those levels. But here are some other things it does that's so crucial. And by the way, taurine is so important that the lack of this amino acid in cat food led to deaths of many animals. So it helps you if you have fatty liver disease. In fact, it's an effective treatment for fatty liver disease. It helps lower blood pressure, especially if you have pre-hypertension. It protects against fluoride-induced neurotoxicity. It ameliorates toxicant-induced memory loss, very important for your memory. It improves your condition if you have diabetes, especially neuropathy. It reduces cardiovascular risk, especially in men and women in their 30s, 40s, and 50s. Very important. It helps reset your circadian rhythm that's damaged by high-fat diets, and it helps with hypothyroidism. It could prevent thyroid dysfunction. It helps reduce left ventricle size. It helps cure liver disease such as cirrhosis, fibrosis, and viral hepatitis, along with milk thistle, I might add. And it also is great for helping alleviate ascites, which is an abnormal accumulation of fluid. And it's great for cystic fibrosis. It helps to alleviate effects on eyes from computer use, reduced visual fatigue. It can help carbohydrate metabolism and skeletal muscle, particularly during post-workout. It's great for keeping your loss of muscle mass down as you age, and protects against gastric damage due to drugs and bone loss. And it also helps prevent breast cancer. So, one of the most important nutrients we can take. We're 26 minutes into our program. That's the latest on health and healing. Back in a moment. Please stay with us. I'm Gary Nall, back in the city in just a few days, but I also noticed that I thought that the Hoboken International Film Festival was this weekend. It turns out it's tonight. I won't be able to fly back in time for it, but it's really my favorite film festival because it's truly an independent film festival. See, when you go to the big festivals like Toronto or let's say to Sundance, you're competing as a small independent film producer, director, with studios and big-name directors and multi-million-dollar budgets, and that's what gets the attention, with rare exception. Whereas the true independent film festivals, they only allow in people who have a relatively small-budget film, generally under a couple $100,000, and where it was independent, the writer, the director, producer are in the independent business. So I'm one of those people that support the independent film movement and have my entire career. So this is like one of the most respected film festivals in the world, and they have the best. Last time I was there, it's 2 years ago, and there was Billy Dee Williams and a lot of well-known celebrities come. All is such a relaxed and enjoyable environment. So anyhow, because I can't come, I'd like to give my two tickets, to because I was going to bring my brother, but can't be there. So if anyone in the audience, it's out in New Jersey. It's about an hour and a half from George Washington Bridge, and it'll be a big deal. It's a big affair. There'll be a couple thousand people there, and you have a chance to see some films and then go to the awards gala tonight. You can call my office if you want to attend. And the number, you have to dress up, you know, like a suit and tie or a sports jacket and tie dress. And it's call my office at 646-926-5422, 646-926-5422, if you would like to attend with one other person. There's tickets for two, and those tickets are a couple $100, so you get to go for free and enjoy yourself. If you've never been to an independent film festival, there'll be a lot of celebrities there and a lot of nice people. Have a chance to see, they always show you that I have a film in contention. I don't know if I'll win Plant Coast, but who knows? I might. And so that's that. Now, for those of you who are angry that Hillary Clinton lost, how closely did you study her record compared to Bernie Sanders? The reality is that today, America, we should have a president in the form of Bernie Sanders. Now, even though I voted for Jill Stein, I would have accepted Bernie Sanders because on 27 different points, he is progressive. On 4 points, he is regressive, and on 3 points, he is imperialistic. So there are things I would not agree with him, but that's fine. I mean, if it were even 50-50, it would still be acceptable. But when I look at something, I'm not looking at the personality. I'm looking at what have they actually done, because that's where I draw the distinction. I'm going to share with you what would have been the outcome had Hillary Clinton been elected. And then just remember, you're going to hear a guest. You're going to hear a lawyer who's brought a lawsuit against the Democrat National Convention. You're going to hear all these committee on the show in the next week, and you'll hear how they rigged the election for Hillary. And they lost. Okay, they rigged it. They lost. They never thought they would lose. But this is just typical of the Clintons. So here we go. First and foremost, it's yes or no. That's the answer. These are progressive issues. The repeal of the worst labor law, the Taft-Hartley, which intrudes upon freedom of speech. Sanders, yes, repeal it. Hillary, no. On halting nuclear energy. Sanders, yes. Hillary, no. On reducing hydrofracking, something that's important to the people in this audience. Sanders, yes. I'm going to get rid of hydrofracking. Hillary, no. On continuing the fossil fuel subsidies that we give hundreds of billions of dollars a year to the fossil fuel industries. Sanders, no. No more subsidies. Hillary, yes. On this so-called oxymoron clean coal that Barack Obama brought with him, of course, one of his campaign manager, David Axelrod, had worked with the coal industry and the nuclear industry both. And so in comes this whole idea, we're going to have clean coal. Well, Sanders says, no, don't want clean coal. Hillary says, yes. Offshore drilling. Sanders says, no offshore drilling. Hillary says, no. They agree on that. Carbon tax. Sanders says yes. Hillary says no. Tax on speculative trading. Sanders says no. Hillary doesn't know. Moratorium on GMOs. This is a big one for many people in this audience, myself included. If you watch the film Seeds of Death, you would know why we should all be concerned about genetically engineered seeds. Sanders says, yes, he wants to stop the GMOs. Hillary says, no. Repeal the DARK Act and mandate GMO labeling. Sanders says, yes, repeal the DARK Act, which was written by Monsanto and other people in the GMO industry with Obama. But Hillary says, no, don't touch GMOs. The national minimum wage of $15 or higher, immediately. Sanders says, yes, give people a living wage, $15. Hillary, no. Reinstate the Glass-Steagall Act. Sanders says, yes. Hillary says, no. Repeal Citizens United. Sanders says, yes. Hillary says, yes. Saying no to the Trans-Pacific Partnership or the TTIP or other treaties like it. Sanders says, yes. No, not for Hillary. Reform or repeal NAFTA and CAFTA. Sanders says yes. Hillary says no. Forgive student loan debt. Sanders says yes. And Hillary, no. Hillary kind of is measly on this one in that she wants to see students help, but only help through banks and not forgiving any of the loan, but only readjusting how the debts are paid. Well, if you're broke and if you have compounding interest, what does it matter if someone says, we're going to let you pay this over your entire lifetime and you're going to be paying 500% more than what you owe? That's not helping anyone, but that's the way the Clintons always weasel out of everything. Repeal the National Defense Authorization Act. Hillary says no. Bernie says somewhat. Repeal some of it. Well, Chris Hedges, Nye, and Cornwell say repeal it completely. Lessen whistleblower policies, meaning protect whistleblowers. Sanders says yes. Hillary says no. Legalize marijuana. Sanders says yes. Hillary says no. Universal health care. Sanders says yes. Hillary says no. Break up the big banks. Sanders yes, Hillary no. Repeal the Patriot Act. Sanders yes, Hillary no. Sever support of Saudi Arabia. Sanders somewhat. That's one of the things I disagree with him on. And Clinton, no, don't repeal. And by the way, Saudi Arabia gave the Clinton Foundation millions, tens of millions of dollars. Dramatically reduce the national defense budget. Sanders somewhat. Hillary, no. Reduce overseas military bases. Sanders, yes. Hillary, no. Normalize relations with Russia. Sanders says yes. Hillary says no. Oppose Israel apartheid in Palestine. Sanders is lukewarm, but says minimally. Hillary says no. Decrease the arsenal of nuclear weapons. Sanders, yes. Hillary, no. Cease aggressive threats against China. Uncertain about, we don't know if it's yes or no on Sanders. It's no. In effect, the Clinton machine is posturing NATO for war against Russia, a first-strike capability, and would do the same against China. Stop NATO containment of Russia? No and no. They're both wrong on that. That's one of the issues that they're really involved, both of them. The whole democratic apparatus is involved in this kind of the neo-colonial imperial overreach, hegemony in the world. So they're both wrong on that one. Mandate vaccines. Hillary says, yes, everyone should be vaccinated. No exceptions. And we don't know. We don't have a yes or no from Sanders on that. Overhaul pharmaceutical pricing. Sanders says, yes. Hillary, we have nothing on that. But she's always favored pharmaceutical. Campaign finance reform. Sanders, yes. Hillary, no. Free public university education. Sanders, yes, and Hillary, no. Reduce prison sentencing and inmates. They both said yes. Also, expand Social Security. Sanders says yes. Hillary, no. Overhaul and defund the National Security Agency surveillance. Sanders says yes. Overhaul it and defund it. Clinton, no. Reform of public airwaves. Sanders, yes. Hillary, no. Free public college education. Sanders, yes. Hillary, no. Reduce support for the charter schools. Sanders, yes. Hillary, no. Reform the judicial system. Sanders, moderately. Hillary, no. Increase federal funding for public housing. Sanders, yes. Clinton, possibly, and that means no. LBG rights. Sanders, yes. And Hillary, not nationally. Strengthen the hate crime laws. Yes and yes. A progressive immigration reform. Sanders, yes. Clinton, moderately. And internet freedom. Sanders, yes. Hillary, no. Now, in addition to that, I'll be a little more specific on some of these. When it comes to militarism, and that is one of the biggest concerns I have, because it's not Trump that you have to concern yourself with directly and exclusively. It's the people who have surrounded Trump, the deep state, the hidden hands of this entire unaccountable group of power mongers in Washington, now the national security agencies and the defense contractors that support them. You're talking about 400,000 people plus who are all on one side of the equation. They only thrive as parasites off war. So the body politic is keep people afraid, make everything seem as if it's an axis of evil that we must fight and make sacrifices. And that's how they thrive. So Hillary, as Secretary of State, conducted many of these operations dealing to expand the U.S. corporate weapon sales to other countries, notably to the Gulf and Africa, and aggressively sought regime change in Libya, Honduras, the Ukraine, Venezuela, Paraguay, and then Syria. Now, she considers Russia to be the number one threat to the U.S., and I have to ask a simple question. How many people in this audience have been to Russia? Have you been, let's say, to the most western side city in Russia, which would be St. Petersburg? It's right close. It's the closest major city in Russia. Moscow is much further away and in the interior. Russia's St. Petersburg is, quite frankly, one of the most developed, beautiful cities on the planet. It would be right beside Paris, for example, you have a very large group of young people who are highly educated. PhDs are nothing unusual there. And they have freedoms they've never had in the past. These are the millennials. These people were born after the or around the time of the Russian Federation, 1991, 92, breaking up. And so they've had freedoms their parents never had. And they're under sanctions. The ruble has been crippled. There are a lot of things that are very expensive to import, so they've started to rely upon, even in fashion, something interesting that the average American wouldn't understand. Historically, Russia was never a fashion center. If you were wealthy and you lived in Russia, you went to Paris, you went to Milan, you went to New York to buy your fashions. But now they've had to rely upon creating their own fashion industry, and they do that in St. Petersburg. Now where they had none, zero, not one, now they have dozens of fashion designers and fashion houses, and they're using material from Russia, and there's a whole group of these young and very talented designers coming up. Well, these people have lives. There's a thriving educated class, a thriving working middle class, and they appreciate what they have. Is there corruption? Absolutely. Is there greed? Of course. But you also have freedoms never before experienced, affluence never before experienced, and where we started to sanction them, they just stopped purchasing food from the United States. They started going to other countries and then growing their own. And now they have the largest, they're the largest suppliers of organic produce in the world. So on the one hand, they go through a crippling time of austerity and come up on the other end as the number one provider of fruits and vegetables that are organic, and they're absolutely opposed by law to GMOs. So you got to be very careful when you're applying sanctions that the country is not capable, through its own resources, both the human capital and through environmental assets, to then exceed what it had done before. It no longer was dependent upon outside sources as storing for itself. And you're talking about a country so large that you could put the United States, pick the United States and put it up into its boreal forest and its rangeland, and it would get lost. That's how big Russia is. More oil, more gas, more lumber, more farmland, more healthy water, more larger aquifers than any other place on the planet. So we're never told about this. We're made to think that somehow there are all these people hunkered down in shelters waiting for the nuclear bomb to go off. They only spend about 4.5% of their budget on the military. And we are spending 56%. In fact, we spend more on a military-industrial complex than the next five countries, including China and Russia, combined. So there's a big support for Putin in Russia with all of his flaws and his nationalism. But understand you're dealing with an extremely educated country, far more educated than the United States. They make Americans look like complete blithering idiots on a one-to-one basis. Oh, by the way, Libya's Gaddafi had a higher life expectancy than the average person in the United States, and they had a higher literacy rate in post-secondary education in the United States. So this kind of myth that we are the brightest, the smartest, the most educated, it's a lie. We do have some bright people. We do have some good institutions of education, but we are not the only ones. And others are coming from way behind, and they don't want to lose that. So common sense. Do you really think that any nation in the world, the Chinese or the Russians, want to lose everything that they have gained in the last 10 to 20 years by nuclear confrontation or a war? They do not. And yet you would never think that anyone has a capacity for common sense and reason or peaceful diplomacy as a motivating factor for life except Americans. And yet we have no concept of peaceful mediation. Everything is looked upon as a warrior's advantage. And look at the countries we've gone into. Look at the countries we have undermined. Libya, Honduras, Ukraine, Venezuela, Paraguay, and Syria just in the last 7 years. and Hillary Clinton has been behind all that. Also, you have to look at corporate influence over government. Hillary's deeply tied to Wall Street and multinational private interest, and that is instrumental in bringing them into the government and post. So who chose Barack Obama's cabinet? Citigroup, an officer of Citigroup, chose his cabinet. We have the WikiLeaks. We have the man who did it. This is before he took office. And all the people he said, here's who Citibank and the silent hand, the deep state wants in your cabinet to run your cabinet. And that's exactly who Obama put. And Clinton did the same. Well, Bernie's consistently been an enemy of Wall Street and monolithic mega corporations. He wants to break up the big banks. She wants to keep the big banks in secrecy. Hillary's entire career, not just as a New York legislator, as a wife of the president and actually co-president, but also Secretary of State, was shrouded in her own secret activities to benefit the Clinton family and favors to the National Surveillance State in the Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act. Bernie would end the National Security Agency spying and cut the intelligence budget, rewarding private intelligence and surveillance firms. And he's opposed to the Patriot Act and the National Defense Authorization Act, which would be dismantled. So that's a huge difference. Now, if you want to know how bad that is, I'm going to play a clip now. This is just something new, and this proves what we've been saying, that the National Security Agency and the CIA has been engaged in illegal wiretapping all along. And now even the FISA court judges, who've been extremely complicit in approving 99.9% of all of the requests to do warrantless wiretaps on people, even they are appalled by how illegal and overreaching the National Security Agency is. And the National Security Agency is the single most dangerous entity in the world at this moment, because they're unaccountable, and they're the ones who have the rogue agents who feel they have the power to do whatever they want. It's like 7 days in May. Please listen into this report.
More than 1 in 20 internet searches conducted by the National Security Agency involving Americans during the Obama administration violated constitutional privacy protections. And that practice went on for years. Not only that, but the Obama administration was harshly rebuked by the FISA court for doing it. That's the conclusion from shocking new evidence tonight about what one senator calls an enormous abuse of power. Chief Washington correspondent James Rosen has the story.
On the day President Obama visited Los Angeles last October to yuck it up with Jimmy Kimmel, lawyers for the National Security Agency were quietly informing the Foreign Intelligence Surveillance Court that NSA had systematically violated the rights of countless Americans, a subject covered ironically on Kimmel's program.
People expect the government to monitor this enough to protect them from bad guys. But they worry that if government is in there too much, then that who's going to protect them?
Yeah, who's going to protect them? This is the difference between how something is perceived by the public. If the public generally thinks that you're a cool person, if you have a pleasing demeanor and mannerisms, if you're jovial and safe, self-effacing, they don't hear the message. They simply stop at the idea of something as primal as, well, I like you, so I'll let you go on a lot of other things. Whereas if they don't like you, doesn't matter what your message is, they just don't like you. So here is when President Obama is telling the audience, now we're conscious of that. No, he was made fully aware that the government was illegally spying. And there you have it. Now here's the question. They were caught in illegal activity. Will anybody be held accountable? No. Will anyone lose their job? No. Will there be any change? No. Will they continue illegally spying? Yes. With a hope that it won't be leaked at some point in the future. Now, to give you an idea of how wrong we have been on this Donald Trump business, and this has all been a red herring created by the Clinton group 24 hours after she lost the election. This is to bring her back into politics as an activist citizen, which she's never been in her career, and try to put the blame on Assange is the guilty one, Comey's the guilty one, and the Russians are guilty. Well, we happen to know that the person who leaked the information wasn't a Russian person hacking it. It was a person inside the DNC who took the information after seeing how corrupt it was and what it was doing to prevent Bernie Sanders from a fair opportunity to gain the nomination to be president, put it on a thumb drive, took some documents, met with a former ambassador of Great Britain in a park near George Washington University. Then that guy was shot twice in the back. It was called a murder, a robbery. Nothing was stolen. Julian Assange gave a $20,000 reward. Now there's independent information. Someone has come forward showing that Seth had the guy who was killed had been communicating and corresponding, and he has the emails to prove it, that he was the leaker. So now we actually know who the leaker was, and we have independent confirmation. So what does that do to the Russian narrative? It completely discredits it. Will the media get on board on this? Not at all. They'll continue to harp on this. Here's Julian Assange just recently saying about how bad it is to be dealing with Saudi Arabia because they're the ones really funding all the terrorists.
Saudi figures have been supporting ISIS, funding ISIS. But the dodge has always been it's just some rogue princes using their cut of the oil money to do whatever they like, but actually the government disapproves. But that email says that, no, it is the governments of Saudi and the government and Qatar that have been funding ISIS.
Okay, and to add something to that, from Patrick Coburn of Counterpunch, quote, "This is the leaked memo, and this is the actual memo I'm going to read. Quote, we need to use our diplomatic and more traditional intelligence assets to bring pressure on the governments of Qatar and Saudi Arabia, which are providing clandestine financial and logistics support to ISIS and other radical groups in the region." Mind you, this is an actual memo. This is why they're embarrassed. This is one of the memos that was showing that the American media did not touch on this. They touched only on the fact that the Russians must have gotten this. Well, this didn't come from Russia. WikiLeaks published this. Again, listen to the memo, because this is inside. This is Podesta and to Hillary Clinton. Quote, we need to use our diplomatic and more traditional intelligence assets to bring pressure on the governments of Qatar and Saudi Arabia, which are providing clandestine financial and logistical support to ISIS and other radical groups in the region. That means they are the number one supporters, enablers of terrorism. So how in the world does the mainstream media, not one, none of them, get this right? How can they not get it right? How complicit can they be before finally someone in the liberal community calls them out? This is an embarrassment, because here we have this president running around saying, oh, you know, we're going to end terrorism. We want you to be. And these people are laughing and saying, what kind of goofball is this guy? We're funding the terrorists. They know it. Their CIA knows it. The National Intelligence Agency knows it. We're working with the CIA to get weapons from Benghazi over to Libya to fight Assad. We want regime change. All these so-called moderate rebels are al-Nusra. These are all terrorists. These are beheaders. So we try to make them look like this. Somehow they're nice guys. They're not. They're killers. And but without Saudi Arabia and Qatar and United Arab Emirates and Kuwait, there would be no funding in the Middle East for these terrorists. Let's blame it all on Iran. But Iran is the enemy of these. Russia and Iran have done more to stop and limit and destroy ISIS, al-Nusra, al-Qaeda than anyone else. We were protecting these very same people, protecting them. 12,000 tanker trucks filled with oil each week were leaving out of Turkey, going into Syria and going into the southeastern area of Iraq, stealing their oil, taking it back into Turkey, selling it on the black market, and funding ISIS with it. We knew all that. We saw all this. We didn't once bomb a single convoy. Russia comes in, boom, bombs the convoys. You want to kill ISIS? Dry up their funds and stop them from using oil. Why didn't we do that? Why didn't the media talk about that? Why wasn't that a feature on 60 Minutes? Quote, It is not as if Hillary Clinton, the Secretary of State, and the U.S. foreign policy establishment in general did not know what was happening. An earlier WikiLeaks release of a State Department cable sent under her name in December 2009 states, quote, Saudi Arabia remains a critical financial support base for Al-Qaeda, the Taliban, Lashkar-e-Taiba in Pakistan, end quote. But Saudi's complicity with these movements never became a central political issue of the U.S., and why not? The answer is that the U.S. did not think it was in its interest to cut its traditional Sunni allies loose and put a great deal of resources into making sure that that did not happen. Also, wasn't interesting at this very time that Hillary Clinton was informing others that she knew how bad Saudi Arabia was. Her foundation was receiving tens of millions of dollars from Saudi Arabia and these other places. And oh, by the way, how many of the refugees from Libya caused by NATO and Saudi Arabia, how many of them found a home in Saudi Arabia? None. Japan, not one. Kuwait, none. No. Jordan, yes, the largest number. And Turkey, but Turkey was a part of the problem. So the very people committing themselves to destabilization and hegemony were using weapons from the United States to do so. So when you see those big weapons sales that everybody says, oh, isn't that great? Well, it's great for ISIS. It's great for al-Nusra. It's great for the radical Islamists. It's not great for peace. It's not great for the people we'll be used against. I'm Gary Nall. Thank you all for listening. Have a nice day.